Your business prowess makes me all the more frightened for your volcano endeavors if they were to ever come to fruition, because you really sound like you can make these things happen at the drop of a hat now.
It was super weird. At XOXO, the guy that recorded the vine of Doogie doing the tearaway trousers thing, that was Jason Schellen. And he literally snapped into like defense mode. Because he thought it was like this crazy person that just like burst in. and so when it like initially happened, I sort of wandered off because I was in such shock. And Shellen was like, Shellen walks up to me, he's like, "What the f*** are you doing?" sort of thing. And and all these people are standing around and they're like, like someone was like, "Wait, I don't get it." And I was like, "Oh, I used to have this podcast and there was this running joke about tearaway trousers." And they're like, "Wait, I thought you like ran a company." And it's like, "Yeah, I do that too. Sometimes it's just whatever."
Yeah, we were privately joking that you were backing away because you were terrified. I thought it was maybe just so you could get a better look at what he was doing down there, but that makes a lot more sense. So the reason the vine cuts off right there is because somebody tackled that young man.
Well, no, so that vine was the reenactment, but I was still just as shocked the second time. So he came over and did that, and Shellen was like, "What the f*** are you doing?" And like I sort of came back and was like, "Okay, no, it's this thing." And he's like, "Oh. Well, in that case, I need a vine of it." And I'm still, like, just in complete shock. And so we had to reenact it. So I actually have a longer, like, 1 minute long video that Shellen was recording in his left hand that was just of the whole scene. And then he had in his right hand his phone that he was recording the vine with.
Did anyone get recording of the first incident?
No, because it was just a talk had just finished. I was sitting in the back row because I was, inconsolably hungover. And, everyone else is like really up towards the front, that sort of thing. I was like, "I'm gonna go like be near the back in case I need to like throw up or die or something." and so I was sitting in the back, and Shellen came and sat down with me because he was late. And so it just finished, and I'd had a tweet from this Doogie guy saying like, "Hey, if you're here, I've been trying to find you all weekend. I'd love to chat," sort of thing. So yeah, he just walked up and he was like, "Hey, are you Matt?" I'm like, "Yeah," and he's like, "Can I share one way in which you've like really had a meaningful impact in my life?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, yeah, sure." And I'm like sort of really taken aback, like really sort of emotional for a second. And then the first time he did it, so like the second time in the video, they kind of got stuck. But the first time he did it, he just tore them away and they literally like fluttered in the air for a second. Like he let go. And I didn't even say anything. I just walked off. So
you should have said you don't have another pair underneath. D minus.
Well, no, because I thought he was just wearing underwear underneath at first, and so I was just like, "Oh my God, it's a complete psychopath." And I thought so too.
Was he not? Was he wearing shorts?
No, he was wearing shorts. It's like his, he had been ready to do this since the beginning of XOXO. This was like in the after. This was like the end of the second morning. The morning on Sunday, and all this stuff had been happening since Friday. And so he had been trying to meet me through that whole time. And so it became this running thing every time someone saw him. His name is Doogie Prophet, for one, which is f***ing amazing. And and so every time we saw him, like people were just like offering him jobs and things because he was so ridiculous.
Wait, was it Velcro, snaps, or magnets?
It was Velcro. I did ask him, though. I did ask him. Oh, no, it made the realization at the time was that Velcro is really effective because it makes a really loud noise to announce that you've just literally torn away a piece of clothing,
or to terrify the person you're demonstrating it to.
Right.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Please tell me that story can stay in the show.
As long as he doesn't care.
Sure. Yeah. We'll be certain to have our lawyers consult with him.
No, because he was like a really nice guy, and he had like a Need hat with him, which I don't even know how he got. He must have been like really quick off one of our podcast things. But yeah, it was fun. It was surreal. It was crazy.
Wow.
I don't even know how I got into this story, but I think it's something to do with me trying to be a responsible adult.
I think it's just the fact that everything is going right for you and your life is fantastic and amazing, and we are all incredibly jealous now.
Well, no, because it's not all, not like everything is, obviously. It's like we have issues all the time. But just the bullet points of everything are quite positive right now. But yeah.
But the important part is you're not running your company like Devil Wears Prada style, right?
I've never seen that film, so I don't know.
Oh my God.
Oh, well, yeah, you really should.
Yeah.
That's really? Good.
Yeah.
It's very Meryl Streepy.
Oh, that's what I look for in a film.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like on IMDb, like, well, you know, it's my new thing. MerylStreepy.com.
See, and this is why I wanted to have you on here, because of all the things we know about you, we don't know much about your taste when it comes to, or at least I don't, about movies and music and that sort of thing.
I'm just really picky.
Well, what are the things that you do like?
That's such a broad question.
Okay, let's start with movies.
Okay. I don't know, like a bit of everything. I have like guilty pleasures like anyone else to watch like a stupid film like the most recent Transformers. I was in San Francisco over the weekend. And I found myself with like a quiet evening for the first time in ages.
And that's how you chose to spend it watching Transformers.
So I bought, this is super depressing when I say it out loud. So I bought like two massive bottles of wine and a pizza and went back to my hotel room and demolished both bottles of wine and the pizza whilst watching Transformers and just like sitting in bed by myself in the middle of San Francisco going like, well, what are you doing, Mark Wahlberg? Stop it. So I have guilty pleasures like that. I love all the Marvel films, but I don't have a particular like genre of film I really get really super into. I love like I love 2001. I love all the Godfather films.
So you like classics, basically.
Yeah, I like a lot of old films. My girlfriend doesn't really like going back and watching older films, but she can get over it because we're going to watch a lot of older films. So we do that. So I watch like a lot of the older James Bond films. I bought them all on Blu-ray to watch on my 4K television, gentlemen, which we will talk about. And I don't really play video games or anything so much. I listen to really terrible music, mostly of the like electronic variety or like really old school hip hop.
So are we talking when you say electronic, are you talking like Paul Oakenfold and?
No. I listen to like a particular type of. I listen to drum and bass, which is a very descriptive name. Mm-hmm.
Nothing in music uses drums nor bass.
No, so it's this new thing, and by new I mean like it's really old. It's just kind of like really quick. I don't know why I listened to it. I used to play the drums, so I think that's probably the link.
You saw Swordfish, and you realized that you had to listen to loud electronic music in order to hack your viruses into Hydras or whatever the hell he was doing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Oh, right, you know, he was drinking wine in that scene as well, wasn't he?
Good. I'm actually having beer right now.
Oh, what happened to the Trader Joe's wine?
Well, I was going to get that out, but then I realized it would be really obvious to anyone that came home while I happened to be recording this that I had an entire bottle of wine to myself while I was recording a podcast. So I went to like my little stash of beer and brought three bottles in here, so I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it's always important to conceal one's alcohol usage.
Yeah. It's step one, get the alcohol. Step two, conceal it. I don't know what the rest of them are.
Bro down. Anyway, so should we officially state that we actually started the show at some point?
Yeah, have we started the show?
I think we started a while ago.
Okay, I just want to make sure, because it would be awkward if we kept going for like 30 more minutes and then didn't say anything about actually starting the show.
I'll tell you, there is absolutely nothing I want to do for the rest of this day or any other day than have this conversation right
wait,
now.
Wait. Not to break all the walls or whatever. But you guys are in the California, right?
No, only one of us is in the California.
Okay, so where are you, Dan?
I'm currently in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, so you're on the same time zone as me, right?
No, I'm on the same time zone as California, actually.
They don't believe in daylight savings time.
Yeah, we're right. Okay,
so it's like relatively early for you guys.
It's 3:15.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. I mean, after 3 o'clock, you're not really meant to do anything anyway.
I mean, I fired a client this morning. That's all I'm really going to get done today.
That's nice. Yeah. I fired like 3 employees. I didn't really. Wouldn't that be horrible?
You didn't fire them so much as kick them into the volcano. Yeah.
They're just not getting college credit anymore.
I actually do have one that's getting college credit. She's an intern, though, and I'm also paying her. I'm not a horrible person. It's okay.
I know. Well,
I sent her to IKEA today.
You said you're not a horrible person and you sent her to IKEA?
IKEA is a lot like the Transformers theory series, not theory. It'd be interesting if there was a theory. No, because it's like, it's one of those things that's a guilty pleasure for some people. I can't believe I just made that metaphor work. but it's true. And so I sent her there, and she had the best time. She came back, and she was skipping and whatever else.
Yeah. Well,
more,
it's also
more
like
Omars and Kallaxes?
No, actually, we sent her to get desk legs today, because we have, like, three more desks, but we don't have any legs for them. And it turns out they've discontinued the legs we have. So I then sent her out to get paint so she could paint them to be the right color. So she's having a cracking day.
Having legs for your desk is a good workflow tip for people.
Yeah, always have legs for your desk, and then work at that desk.
So you bought desks without legs.
Yeah, because I'm hipster. So we buy like big wooden like slab desks, and then we put, you know, sawhorse sort of legs underneath them.
Ah,
I was gonna make a reclaimed wood joke, but apparently I shouldn't, because that's...
we have like so much reclaimed wood in the office, and and in my eyes we have too little reclaimed wood in the office, so it's soon to be just like a small forest in there. And I'm very excited about it. So
I don't want to do anything for the rest of my life other than follow you around with a video camera. Can I do that?
we literally had a guy come over the other day. You may listen to this, I have to be careful. And he's wearing like a tank top to do with Jesus somehow, but he turned it inside out because everyone kept making fun of his Jesus tank top. And he came in and he was like, "Oh yeah, you guys could use some more wood in here." And so he's just making this giant like entertainment center out of reclaimed wood. And I love that. So no judgment, please. And whoever the people are while I'm back on the public broadcasting stage, whoever the people are that keep making fun of my IKEA decisions in my office, I'm not going to swear, but you can imagine what I'm saying to you. And it's really horrible. So, you know, it's one of those things. We don't have that much money. We're a young company.
It's totally normal. You know, like, I've got some IKEA stuff, too. I mean, it just takes 3 years to build it with all those little tiny nails. And then you just hopefully get it to not decompose instantly in front of your eyes. The reclaimed wood is probably going to last longer than the MDF that it's made out of.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird to be on a show that's not Mike. One of you should pretend to be Mike or something.
What would you like to be known for?
I dread the day that he's never going to invite me to be on one of those shows because I'd ruin it. But if he ever asks me that seriously, I'm gonna absolutely cage up and not be able to answer it.
Oh, so you genuinely don't have an answer, even though you've known that he would potentially ask you about this for years now.
Yeah. It's one of those things that like it's one of those things where like I'll wake up and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm just like, oh my god, what do I like to be known for? And like I put on like a smoking jacket and pace around my apartment. I'm like, oh god, and it's just like really existential sort of crisis at 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking about Mike.
Mike gives you cold sweats in the middle of the night.
Mm. Oh, he does. we don't talk as much as we used to because he's always on like holidays and things now. He's always in like Italy now that he has a podcasting empire, which is good for him. He needs more sun, and so do I. So I'm happy for him. His network's very fancy now. I went on it today. I've not listened to any of their shows yet. Don't tell him. But I'm very, very proud of him.
Yeah,
I'm in their Slack channel, which is really must be awful for them.
Wait, you haven't listened to anything they've done, but you're in their Slack channel?
Yeah, I'm in the Relay FM Slack, and I think I listened to one of their episodes. I listened to the first episode of Upgrade with Jason Snell, which I thought was very good.
Yes.
And it was weird to hear Mike talking again. And I enjoyed that.
You're just like an honorary member of the board of their podcast network?
Yeah, I don't know why. Because I'll literally sometimes go to the once or twice recently I've been in their chat room. But I've had my computer on mute, so I haven't heard anything they're actually talking about in the show. And I'm just in the channel just going like, butts, and like just making fun of the whole thing. but I'm not actually listening to the show. And like Stephen will start like sending me a G talk at the same time, like, please stop. No, but seriously, please stop. Yeah, so I just, you know, I just, they could use a little bit of disruption from time to time.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Not in a startup sense, but yeah, exactly. but, you know, your show is the only show I listen to.
That baffles me. Why in the world did you listen to our show?
No, because I got really into it because it's very, I hate shows that have, like, I like shows that have a cool hook and then it's really organic around that. So, like, Defocused, you kind of, you have this, so we had this big talk for a while around Bionic because we were like, what? What on earth are we doing? And because we didn't have any direction, and it was, we had a few ideas that a few people proposed, like friends of the show and stuff, sort of saying, like, why don't you pick like a news thing to talk about or whatever. Obviously we never did any of that, but that was kind of always the goal, because we'd have a little bit of structure from around which we could joke around and whatever, rather than me just like opening my mail. And
did you ever send any money to the fire department?
No, I didn't. I didn't, and I still haven't sent out the volcano stickers yet either.
Yeah, we know. We bought a couple.
Good. Yeah, no, I owe those. Unless Joe's receiving some right now.
No, it's just AT&T U-verse. I reached for the first envelope on my desk. There's lots of envelopes on my desk, just for practical comedy effect, and unfortunately it wasn't as exciting as I had hoped.
Yeah, no, I have like a bill from my CPA, and that's about it, and I'm not opening that, so... I finished the show, and like we finished Bionic, and Mike and I had like outside the show been talking about like things we liked or whatever, and he had mentioned yours, and I had listened to like one or two, and so like when we did record, we were sort of saying like, hey, if you're like looking for something Bionic-esque, go listen to this thing. And I took my own advice and I went and listened to the show, and I really enjoyed it. And you guys were just like really disproportionately angry about something sometimes, and it's like, it's so great. And so I got really excited about it, and so I've been listening. I'm not all the way caught up. I haven't heard the one with Stephen yet because I don't want to listen to him on anything. So that's a joke idea. I do. I haven't finished. I haven't caught up fully yet, but I will. It's in my whatever they call them, podcatcher, which is such a stupid name, but it's there.
Well, you'll like that one because it's Pirates of Silicon Valley, and we talk about Steve Ballmer, your favorite person, and Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and all that.
I've never seen that film.
It's probably not worth the expense on Google Play.
Not so much.
Wait, you have to buy it on Google Play?
That is the only place you can watch it online.
No, then I'm not going to watch it.
No, don't.
No.
You're not missing much.
You can just listen to the episode and then watch the animated GIF of
that. GIF, Steven. Really? Do you say GIF?
Yes.
Anyway,
this podcast is over.
That's kind of what I did. I've never seen Dune or whatever, but I said that in such a British way. June. But no, I was listening. It's kind of like I'm saying the month of June. So I listened to that one. That's the one you talked about, right? And yeah. I kind of got a really good sense of that one from just listening to you guys.
Well, Dan didn't even watch the whole entire movie, but he was quite unhappy.
I didn't have time. I watched it right before we recorded. Wasn't that the episode we recorded in two pieces because I was too tired and I couldn't make my brain work?
The first day was we were supposed to record on Monday, and then it was totally unusable garbage. And I was telling him that.
It wasn't. The first 20 minutes is still in the show, but we just got there, and you're like, what is wrong with you? We need to stop, and we'll do this tomorrow.
Yes, and so that's what we did. Seamless movie magic as we transition to recordings together.
No, I like that one though. I liked the World War Z one or Z. Because I've seen that one and it was weird, and I enjoyed you guys sort of tearing it apart. I was very saddened by the one about Guardians of the Galaxy because you guys were so mean, and I liked it.
Oh,
I know. Yeah, no, I was really sad about it. I'm not sad anymore about it, but I was at the time. I was listening to it, and I was like, in my car, I'm like, what are they talking about? And
wait, did you listen before you saw the movie?
No, I'd seen it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I liked it. And you loved it, yeah.
Well, I did. I wasn't, like, infatuated with it. I went in, like, overhyped. But I really liked it, and then you guys were just sort of like, ugh. You know, whatever. There's a particular phrase I can't remember. It's something that's been in like my mental notes for like weeks. That you guys say, like, I don't even know if you've realized you say it about like everything. Every time you guys do an episode, and the only reason I know is because I like binge listened to like all the episodes in a row. And I was going to make a really funny joke about it while we're on here, but I've completely forgotten. So disregard.
We'll edit it in later.
It'll be fine. Yeah, I'll tweet about it or something. I don't know. It's a thing you say. I don't know. This is very specific. I should have said it's just like written a note down or something. This is like Evernote's for. You know, I hate productivity. So.
Speaking of binge listening, I recently went back and listened to all of Bionic again, and I found a funny thing that happens when I do that. If I listen to too many in a row, my internal monologue will have your accent.
That's weird.
It's very weird and disconcerting.
Very strange.
I'll be thinking about things to myself, and I'll realize that it has a British accent, and it's very disturbing.
If that lasts longer than 4 hours, see a doctor immediately.
Yeah. you should be careful about that. How was it on the second time? I've thought about doing that once or twice, but I can't really bear to hear myself. So.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just glad.
The key to good improv made me laugh out loud numerous times again for like the fifth time.
I don't even know what that refers to.
I think that was the Lagoon episode.
Oh God, that show! Like if someone like you know, if God forbid, either Mike or I ever become like successful, and like maybe Mike decides to become prime minister or something. And they go back and listen to that show. They're going to be like, oh my God, we can't let this guy into office. He just spent like an hour talking about how he's going to kill various diplomats in a pond sort of thing. And like, so that's kind of my fear about Bionic.
I hope you become a government dignitary and Barack Obama actually hears the part where you wanted him to sign over the United States to you while he was at the spa.
So the... But the good thing is that Mike doesn't have like any of the archives of this sort of stuff because Mike doesn't keep backups of anything. So I'm pretty sure the only like intact backup of Bionic right now is on 5x5, and God knows how long it's going to stay there. So
you are incorrect. I may be hosting the XML and all the files on my own Dropbox for my personal listening purposes.
Nice. I was going to try and do the same thing, and someone told me that there's like a thing to do that, but I never got around to it.
Yeah, I'll send you the XML feed. You can put it in your podcast app.
So strange. I'm just glad that we got everybody from Bionic on. We had Mike, we had Steven, we had Casey, and now we have you.
Yeah, no, everyone from Bionic is perfect.
Yes, especially Casey.
Yeah. You had to get Merlin. He was the only other person that was on the show, right?
I know, yeah. We'll see where that goes.
You could talk about The World's End.
Oh, it's a good movie.
It is a good movie. Wait, you did talk about that a little bit.
Not really. We were mostly talking about Shaun of the Dead
right.
While we were discussing. It was back when we were trying to like pair up two movies in an unusual pairing. It was like a bundle. That quickly got out of hand, and so we just do one now.
You should do bundles like those really horrible ones that they used to sell in supermarkets and stuff, where it's like Action Super Bundle, and it puts like Die Hard with like Bambi, Yeah, you should do one of those. I just opened up iTunes, and they have like the Unite collection, which is all the X-Men movies.
Hmm.
You could do that.
Well, I got a question. Since the movie that you liked more than anything else in the world and wanted to talk about today was Goldfinger, what bundle would you put with Goldfinger?
I don't know. You could file it into some sort of, mildly misogynistic sort of box set.
I have so many notes about the mild misogyny in this movie.
It's just about, like, Bing Crosby and, like, Sean Connery and some other really horrible person. And it's all their films put together.
You can throw a White Christmas in there.
Yeah, it's like White Christmas, Goldfinger. just all really, like, interrelated shows.
I don't remember anyone picking up the wrong gift in that movie and being shoved in the face over a bed.
This is a very aggressive move he pulls. And it catches me every time I see him do it. I'm like, oh my God, he's just like completely launched her across the room.
And what is up with that stall scene? That's just really weird. Where they're in the horse stable.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just very... like... just flips and struggles her to the ground, and then it's just like, I don't feel good about any of the things that are happening on the screen right now.
They were having a judo roll in the hay.
Mm. I think that's a very specific move, yeah. Urban Dictionary, judo, what was it?
Judo roll in the hay?
It's the name of a really good beer I like. Okay. So how does this work? We talk about the things.
Well, what is it you like about the movie? Let's just start there.
Oh, I don't know. It's just like, I love all the old James Bond films, and I've read like most of the books. And they're kind of like a really good escape for me. I used to watch them with my dad at the weekend in England. They often have them on TV. And Goldfinger is kind of the first one where it goes really all in on being ridiculous. It's the like they do Dr. No, which is kind of ridiculous, but it's kind of like still a little bit sort of grounded, aside from having an Asian guy with just like putty on his eyes, which is actually just a white guy. And like then they have From Russia with Love, which is a train, so it's fairly normal. And then they have Goldfinger, and it's just like, let's have a crazy German person that's super into gold. And that's kind of like, you know what, fair enough, go all in. And so I, you know, it's kind of the first time James Bond movies become really sort of like the stereotype of James Bond movies.
Yeah, I think the words I used for when I was describing this to Dan was it was the Bondiest of the Bond films. Everything that they try to repeat in all of the later films always seems to be sourced from Goldfinger. The double entendre names had already been there, but this is probably the worst one. The action scenes, the chases, all the stuff that goes on here is like cranked up to level 10. Laser rays,
lasers, yeah.
I took a note here, and I think based on the beginning of the show, I have I can confirm that this is why I think you like the movie. It's because his job in this movie is basically to be rich and handsome and travel around the world and be completely nonchalant about everything.
Yeah, because like at the beginning of the film, he's just like in Miami, like after his little mission and everything, he's just kind of hanging out. And it's like, don't you have like a job? And he's just sort of hanging out. And he's just like, you know what? These guys seem a little rich, and I'm just going to mess with them a little bit. And maybe have sex with one of their girlfriends. and you know, he's just going sunbathing with his CIA buddy. And it's like, what are you doing, buddy?
It's like, if he takes down one bad guy every 6 months, he's fine with just his high salary. Just wander around and do whatever he feels.
He's on, like, retainer. It's not actually, like, a secret agent. It's kind of ridiculous.
So, I gotta ask, though. From a clothing perspective, since that is...
I was about to go there.
Yeah, since that's primarily your focus these days, what is your opinion of the outfits? Are we going to see a Need collection that is Bond-inspired?
Well, first of all, the all-in-one sort of swimming outfit he wears, that's like also a towel.
Yes.
Like, where is that today?
The blue terry cloth onesie with shorts.
Yeah. The amount of times I've gone out of the shower and been like, this towel is so lackluster, if only it had a zip.
And a built-in belt for some reason.
And a belt, yeah.
To highlight his waistline.
Yeah, no, everything should have a belt. I'm concerned as to why that's no longer on the market. So, needless to say, I'm saying another company just to produce towel clothing. And it's going to be great. It's going to be big in... I don't know where it's going to be big. Places near water. That place where Kevin Costner was.
Florida?
Florida. I was, of course, referring to the Academy Award winner for best movie ever made, Waterworld.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a lot of Florida going on there. There was a thing for a while at Universal Studios where they had a Waterworld jet ski attraction thing.
There was like a show.
Yeah, that was super cool. By that I mean it was not cool at all. Much like the movie.
It's like those old Western towns where they have like staged gunfights and somebody falls off of a roof into a padded like thing hidden behind a wall.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the whole entire movie either. It's one of those things where I've seen parts of it, like the beginning, the parts of the middle, the ending, and so I feel like I've seen enough to to render a verdict, which is I'm probably not going to go watch the rest of the film.
I mean, it kind of sounds like you've seen the whole thing. You just said you've seen the beginning, middle, and the end.
Yeah, but not all the other stuff, because the thing's like 3 hours long or something. It's sort of an opulent mess. So that's nice. Not for me, but at least you can market your terry cloth onesies there.
Yeah, I mean, if we're in a post-apocalyptic water world, then everyone would need that. Be wet all the time. It wouldn't have much at many other uses. Maybe it's like lounge wear. You could say wear it to like if you wanted to be really pervy in a bar. You know, you never know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's also in that kind of world, you definitely need the wetsuit over your white tuxedo. That would also.
That's what I was wearing like 5 minutes ago.
It was such a fantastic scene because he uses the pigeon on his head as a disguise to swim up to somewhere that he's going to blow up, and then he just casually like. Pulls off his wetsuit and he walks like 10 steps to his hotel. It's like, where were you swimming from? Why did you have a pigeon on your head?
The bird hat is a staple of the espionage community. And I'd appreciate you being kind about it. it's also going to be in a Fuchsia Need collection.
Yes, sell me a bird hat.
Because the thing is, so I got the like Blu-ray collection of all the Bond films or whatever. And Goldfinger looks like really good, but the thing that's really upsetting about it is you start seeing stuff like the bird hat, and you start going like, oh god, why is he wearing a bird on his head? And it's just, you know, it's so obvious and really badly done.
Like the model plane later in the film, and all of the rear screen projection they tried to make look better, but has like weird edges around it. It's a little strange, even for a restoration.
Yeah,
I don't even look at the rear screen projection. I'm just staring at the DB5. It's such a beautiful car. Aston Martin.
So then, is this your favorite Bond car then?
Oh, I don't really have an opinion. The Lotus, the swimming Lotus, is kind of amazing because you know the AC's and Roger Moore. I don't really have an opinion. Well, the one that goes invisible is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
With Pierce Brosnan. When Pierce Brosnan's, like, overweight and, like, 65. He turns up and he's like, oh, god damn it. And sort of falls out of his invisible car.
That was the Aston Martin Vanquish, which they renamed Vanish, which was a terrible pun.
It was just so clever.
That was the one with the ice hotel and Halle Berry. Oh, that movie was so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm frequently told that I look like the bad guy in that.
The South Korean man who turned himself white with DNA modification?
Yeah, exactly.
An incredibly odd thing to say to somebody.
No, I distinctly remember being in school in England, and this guy comes up to me, and it was like that film had just come out, and he's like, look, it's the bad guy from the Bond film. And I'm like, whatever. And like, I went to see it and I was like, I don't look anything like that guy. And then someone on Twitter like 3 weeks ago was like, you look just like this guy from Die Another Day. And it's like, first of all, why are you watching Die Another Day? Second of all, no, I don't at all.
Maybe he's just a completionist and was just finally getting around to it.
I'm dropping this in for you guys.
Maybe it's just that you have a nice big bright smile like he did.
Oh, he doesn't look particularly smiley in the picture I just sent you.
Have you ever parachuted in right in front of the palace in England? Oh my gosh, what a horrible picture you've just sent.
It's the background on my phone. No, I've never parachuted in to see the Queen. One day, though. One day. I'm just waiting for the opportunity to present itself.
Now, this guy has such prominent forehead creases. I don't see how it has anything to do with you.
I have to close this tab. He is staring into my soul right now.
Well, that's how I feel about your Skype avatar. Only now it's a cartoon, so it's a little better than it used to be.
Who, mine?
Yeah.
But okay.
You don't even have an avatar, Joe.
I do.
Oh, wait. It's because we're not buddies on here.
Oh, yeah. That's why I don't see yours. Wait. Does that mean yours is something terrible, too?
No, mine is just...
It's him smiling, picture. Looking handsome in a suit, as usual.
It's actually a picture of me with Mr. Jim Dalrymple from like 2 years ago.
Oh, I can see Jim Dalrymple's hand then, I guess, if that's what that is.
That's what's on my arm. it's nothing else.
Oh, God. I think we were talking about a movie at some point.
Right. So, bird hats.
Should we move on to murdering women with paint?
Yeah. Bird hats in high def. And then he goes into the thing. I haven't, to be fair, so I should say, I was intending to watch this. I have not watched it in like a few weeks, but I do watch it quite frequently, so I feel very, very equipped to talk about it. So he goes into the place. Where are they? They're in like Morocco, right?
I don't know that we know.
No, they're in Cuba. That's why he says that they booked a flight for him back up to Miami.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right,
because that woman in the bar was doing a traditional Cuban lap dance before seducing him and trying to kill him, right?
Well, let's not really overanalyze anything that the James Bond films try to do for depicting places and people of the world, because it's never good.
So he goes in, he blows up the drug place, right? The drug lab.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to Miami for a break. And then he gets that girl murdered. This is the bullet points of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Jill Masterson with a J, according to Wikipedia. She's like doing that whole thing where she's like on the, I'll tell you what, actually what really bothers me, and I'll get to it. He sees them like doing the whole thing, looking at the card game and everything. And he goes in and he just like steals the card from a maid who just then wanders off a bit perturbed that he broke into someone's room.
Yeah. And again, it's just, if you're handsome enough, you can do whatever you want, apparently.
He's just like, oh, sorry, dear. And just sort of goes in, except it's more Scottish than that. Yeah. And he goes in and the thing that really bothers me is the way he starts talking on the microphone to Goldfinger. He's like, now hear this. And it's like, you're not on a boat. And I get that you're meant to be like a naval person, but like, what are you doing? You could just go on and you just be like, hi, I can see you. And he's like, stop cheating. But instead he's like, now hear this. And it's like, what are you doing? That's kind of the way I just said that. But never mind.
Now I'm so glad that you're on the show, because of all the things in this movie that are utterly ridiculous, that's the one you've highlighted.
Yes. It's yeah.
Because you're clearly as insane as we are.
Oh, absolutely. I can't, because I'm trying to remember, like, because it's all fairly boring up to this point, right? Except for throwing the girl around, which is really dodgy.
Well, we missed the beating up of the man and the woman in Cuba, where he electrocutes the man in the bathtub and then says, shocking, and then walks out.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And then sees her and says, absolutely shocking. Because you just needed to like really drive that pun home.
Oh, isn't that when he chokes because he swallows her like belly button ring or whatever? Or is that a different film?
Different movie.
Yeah, you're getting that confused.
Oh, that's a Roger Moore one. That's a Roger Moore one.
He's kissing the girl and he sees in the reflection of her eyeball that someone is coming behind him. So he flips around and uses her as a human shield to take like the hit, and then fights the gentleman who's there to kill him, and then electrocutes him in the bathtub with a heat lamp.
The heat lamp.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So now we're starting to get the picture as to why this masterpiece is my favorite film.
Yes. All the bombs, I took a note, all the bombs have ticking analog clock sounds, just very loudly ticking.
Wait, what bombs?
The bomb to blow up the drug warehouse, and then the bomb later in the movie. They all have very loud ticking noises.
Oh, it was the
50s. As if that was discreet.
Yeah, it's like 1964 or whatever.
We'll just take the ticking part out.
I've read the book, the Goldfinger novel. Have you read any of the James Bond novels?
Nope.
They're all like kind of depressing and really badly written. but like in every single one, it's exactly the same every single time. But like he gets like really badly injured in a lot of these ones. And like Felix Leiter, who's his like CIA best buddy, best friend. In one of them, like right, but because the books happen in a different order than the films, and in this one, by this point he's been like mauled by a shark, and like he's missing like one leg and like one arm and a bunch of fingers, and he's all like messed up and stuff. And in this one, he's just like this like attractive American person, and he's just like wandering around. It's like a different guy every time. And I'm just wondering why they've never incorporated that.
Well, they did the shark thing later in a Timothy Dalton one.
But then the guy is like fine, like because he comes back in all the other ones.
Well, it never. They also changed who it was a lot.
Oh,
so it and I think like the actor in that Timothy Dalton one had gone away and they'd cast somebody else as Felix Leiter for an intervening film. So it's always strange.
But yeah, so they do the whole thing, and then they have sex because he's just like ruined her job and probably got her in loads of trouble. So of course she's really attracted to him now.
It all makes logical sense.
No, it does, and that's what I would do if I were in that position. And then he gets like knocked out by Oddjob. Who is worth an entire episode of a podcast in and of himself. And then they kill her with paint.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's unconscious long enough for, and apparently so is she, long enough to suffocate from skin asphyxiation or whatever they called it.
I love that he lives in England and he's just visiting Miami for like a break. And he clearly brought a sufficient supply of like gold paint with him. Because it's a very specific type. And he's just like, oh, God, you know, I was worried about bringing this back with me. Thank God.
Never leave home without your supply of suffocating gold paint.
Yeah, because the key was, right, that they covered the base of her spine, which is what you have to leave open. Otherwise, right. They can't breathe.
Which he explains in that scene where he, like, gets called into the principal's office back in England to report what happened to his boss.
Yeah, well, it's so strange.
Excuse me, but it's time for exposition.
It's bizarre because he says like, "Oh, it happens often to cabaret dancers. They always leave a square of their back exposed so that their skin can breathe." And I'm just like, "That's a really weird fact to like have off the top of your head."
Well, he's full of weird facts though, because every time he's sitting there in M's office, M's always just like, "Well, what's happened here?" And he's like, "Oh, actually, now that you mention it," and just reels off like all these facts about something completely disparate from what he should know about.
Yeah,
Well, that's because his job is to be worldly and well-traveled and just, you know, just wander around being rich and handsome.
Yeah. Well, is he rich? Oh, he must be, right? Somewhat.
Well, he has a master. At least he has a good expense account of some sort because he can afford an awful lot of things that he otherwise shouldn't have, like a bottle of 10-year-old Dom Perignon in that lovely scene. But clearly not enough to repay a £500,000 Nazi gold brick if he lost it, which is different.
It was only £5,000, but...
Oh, whatever. I added some zeros. It's for inflation.
Yeah, it's just for inflation.
I love that scene where he throws it down in front of Goldfinger. Like, was that in your pants the whole time? Where did that come from? He was just hiding a gold brick in his pocket and just decided to toss it down.
Is that a gold brick in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
That whole golf game... It's kind of amazing because he hunts him down, and it's like the ultimate sort of British situation where it's like, I'm going to hunt him down and best him in golf and then he will know. And it's just, it's the most passive aggressive nonsense that only British people could do.
Right. He caused him to lose money, and in turn, Goldfinger killed his girlfriend, and then they're going to battle it out by seeing who's better at cheating at golf.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, and it's like, I don't even understand the purpose of it. Like, he could have just gone up to him and be like, hey, I have some like Nazi gold. Do you fancy some more? And they would have been like, yes. But instead he's like, I will play him at golf. And hopefully at some point I'll be able to unleash my bar at him and whatever else.
He's so casual. Just at every instance, he likes to poke the bear and just walk and be like, how are you? I'm going to ruin your day for you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, if you think about it, James Bond is a pretty horrible person. Like, really, like, because, I mean, I suppose Goldfinger is pretty horrible as well. Even he kills people with paint. But, like he's habitually, like, messing things up for people. But anyway, I don't know. The golf game, a lot of fun, and throws the Nazi gold around, and then has all the sort of banter with his, like, little sort of caddy friend or whatever. And then Oddjob, for whatever reason, throws his hat at the statue at the end and chops the head off.
Yeah, to demonstrate how serious he is. And Bond's like, oh, well, the owners of the club aren't going to like it. And he's like, I own the club. So that's charming. But it gives us the opportunity to put a homing device on his car so we can see he goes to Geneva.
It's like bad manners are a fate worse than death in this, which I guess is a very British way to act.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's very much sort of like, oh, sorry. It's just all the time. Just very self-deprecating. In which case, James Bond is quite American because he's quite the opposite. But And then they go to Switzerland, and he gets into that silly car chase with the other person, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which made no. I still don't understand, like, why that scene unfolded in any of the unique ways that it did, where she is at one point driving past him, then stops and then takes a shot at him when he's by the side of the road, and then they both go back to driving again, and then he breaks her car, and then he gets...
Because she's trying to shoot at Goldfinger, right? But she's just really bad at it.
Well, she shot at him, though.
Yeah, but that's because, like, Bond was, like, overlooking Goldfinger, like, below. And she tried to shoot at him and hit, like, the ground next to him. I'm fairly sure.
Yeah, she does say that.
Yeah. And she has that really annoying voice. She's like, oh, no. It sounds like she's just, like, swallowed something really horrible. And she's like, oh, get your hands off me. And, oh, no, that's when they're in the woods later. Oh, I'm jumping all over the place. I'm really sorry. I don't know how we're meant to do this. I'm very nervous. I've never been on a podcast before.
We don't know how we're doing it either. But I love that he just completely destroys her car just as an excuse to, like, get her in his car and, like, hit on her.
Yeah, just he uses, like, chariot, his, like, Ben-Hur-esque, like, wheels. And it's like, why? You're just in, like, a random car chase with, like, some random person that you decided to race who just wanted to overtake you.
Hello, pretty girl, I'm going to pop both your tires and tear the entire side off your nice Mustang.
What I love about that is that after that haul unfolds and they're looking at the damage, he's like, oh, it must have been a blown tire. And I'm like, yeah, that totally ripped off the side of the metal car.
It's just like one side of the car's gone. He's like, oh, yeah, your tire's all messed up. And it's like, right. So then he sort of leaves her off to go do her own thing, right?
Yeah, he drops her off at the garage for some reason.
He leaves her at a petrol station in the middle of Switzerland, which is very irresponsible. The Swiss are very nice people. And so he leaves her there and then goes off to chase down Goldfinger. And he finds him at that, the base or whatever. And isn't that where he listens in on them, maybe? I can't even remember.
Yeah, he peers through and sees that they're melting down the car. And then he runs away to hide some more. And he finds her. And then he tackles her and trips the alarm himself because apparently he's a big clumsy idiot. And then they have a car chase.
And the old woman comes out with the machine gun. There we go. That's why I love this film. Yeah, God, I've been waiting for the right reason.
It is actually one of the more ridiculous parts of it that makes me laugh every time I see it. Is because she also has this great expression on her face the whole entire time she's doing it. It's not explained. It doesn't make any sense why she's there. Like, none of the other henchmen are old women. It's just her.
Well, she runs the gate and she, you know, makes stew every now and then in between times. But yeah, there are moments that I laughed out loud. In this one, like where he does the oil slick to make the car like fly off the cliff. The moment the car goes over the cliff, it just explodes for no reason. It
explodes midair.
Yes. Yeah. Giant ball of fire.
No, that's what happens. It's preemptive. Premature explosion. It's a thing. No, but like her face, she has that weird face that she just like someone did really something really horrible in her handbag, and she's just sort of standing there with a gun, and she's really friendly when he goes in, right? Or like he goes past her and she's like all friendly, or someone does, and then like on the way out she's just suddenly got this massive gun. But
and I also liked all the yellow headlights for all the Mercedes that are chasing him to reinforce the whole gold motif, because you can never have too much of a gold motif going on for your gold villains.
And can we point out that those headlights, they tricked him with a mirror into crashing into a wall.
They didn't even purposefully trick him. He was going down this like alley that went nowhere and was fooled by this tiny little mirror that just happened to be there. And Oddjob notices it and even laughs at him over the whole thing. Which is just entertaining in and of itself, that it was a complete accident where Bond got himself in trouble.
Yeah. Although we did miss the fantastic ejector seat usage, where it just comes flying out the top of the car. It's just like flopping dead body of a prop.
I love it because when Q demos it, it's like, well, obviously every single thing he's saying is going to come into play in this movie, because otherwise he wouldn't mention it. And of course, the ejector seat will come into play in the movie, but why he would need a passenger side ejector seat thing is unclear until that exact moment. And it's like, oh, of course. Because this specific car chase where we use every single button in the car. It's magnificent. I love it.
Everything is one use. And every use of it is perfect. The oil slick, presumably finite supply of oil, uses it once, car blows up midair. ejector seat, there's no more. And he uses that the one time, which doesn't make any sense, as you pointed out. And isn't there, like, no hole in the roof of the car afterwards? Like, the car, right, like, no. Like, the guy is, like, gone, and it's like, how did he even get out of the car? But, yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's just briefly before he crashes into the wall and then is captured, and his punishment for being captured is apparently being put on a private jet full of food and liquor and pussy galore.
Wait, no.
No, fast forward.
No. He gets captured, and then they put him on the laser table.
Oh, yes. Right. Sorry, after he escapes the laser table, my bad.
Which is like the most famous Bond scene ever, right?
Yeah. There's probably that quote, you know.
I expect you to die, or whatever.
Yes, that's the quote.
that's the memorable quote.
I can't remember.
No, that's the best bit. Because they're lying there and they have like the whole him like, oh, I'm just going to tell you my whole plan because whatever sort of thing. And then he tries to cut him in half with a laser, and I can't even remember how he gets out.
Well, he is genuinely like a decent bad guy in that he's like, you just said the name of our plan or whatever the code name for the plan was, and you don't actually know what that means, so I'm just going to ignore you and leave, as any actual bad guy would do. But the only way he gets out of it is he basically says, can you afford to risk knowing that the next guy, 008, has all this information, he's going to thwart your plan. So you might as well just keep me alive.
Which is like a pretty responsible decision from Mr. Goldfinger. Like, if I were in that sort of position where I had someone on a table with a laser and they were sort of like, I've compromised your whole thing, how do you know I haven't told anyone else? I would be like, fair enough. Guy.
You know, well, it's like, not even that. It's that he says everyone else, 008 already knows, but 008's not going to come stop him unless 007 dies. Wait. So, like, well, he's like, well, I'll keep you alive so 008 doesn't show up, but he still knows the plan, apparently.
I have a really important question.
Yes.
008, the only time we see him in any of the films, I'm pretty sure, is Goldeneye, and it's
Sean Bean.
Sean Bean. So,
I thought he was 6 in GoldenEye.
Oh, is he 6? He might be. You're right. Damn it. That would have been amazing. Can you imagine if, time aside, and just, like, 008 turns up and it's Sean Bean, and, God, that would be great.
The special edition. We'll just digitally remaster him in there.
Just turns up, gets decapitated, you know, just great. It's just great. Sean Bean's my favorite. My girlfriend, when she first read his name, read it as Cian Bian, and it's forever one of my favorite things, and it's the way we refer to him now in our house.
Oh man, no, I do love him dearly, and GoldenEye is a very good movie, in my opinion, in my estimation. But yeah, that would be quite comedic if he did show up. I think they've had a couple mentions of other 00. Agents that have shown up every now and then, and every so often one of them like dies at the beginning of the movie, and it's like, oh, this is important, let's hope nothing happens to 007. I don't remember what movie that was though. But it's always a unique angle, because I think this is the only time he ever plays the possibility of other agents maybe coming in after him, like acknowledging that he might fail, because usually he's pretty blustery with the I'm gonna take you down anyways, but clearly he's not usually on a laser table in most of the situations.
And, like, all through this, let's not forget, all of this is just gigantic, like, really unsubtle commentary about the Cold War and, like, lingering feelings about the Second World War. And it's done with little to no sort of tact. And it's because, like, everyone's sort of German or, you know, Japanese, and it's a little bit like, what are you guys doing sort of thing.
Well, it was the Chinese, though.
Oh, was it? Yeah, no, that makes more sense. And and everyone's implied to be mates with the Russians and everything.
Well, at least Oddjob, I thought he said was Korean, but I don't know about the rest of the henchmen.
Well, no, the fission scientist was a he was Chinese, and that was when he has that conversation later on about where they got the nuclear device. It's from the Chinese that they got that.
Speaking of, the guy that plays the Chinese guy is the guy from the Pink Panther, Kato. Have you ever noticed that? Yes, it is. And it's one of my most favorite things I've ever noticed.
You mean the guy who generally just stands there and eventually just gets shot to death?
Right. But it's Kato. It's from like Return of the Pink Panther or whatever, when he jumps through the wall and kills him. Or it doesn't kill him, but tries to. And yeah, that's the same person. So, God, I'm teaching so many new things today.
Important fact.
This is huge. I've been trying to wait for my moment to share that with someone. And this is about the moment when he meets Pussy, right? Which feels weird to say on a podcast.
But when you put that sort of emphasis on it, yeah, it's a bit awkward.
There was a certain inflection to the way you said it that was unique.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
And of course, he even puts up an eyebrow when she says her name.
Yeah. Well, because he thinks he's dead, right? And he makes that whole sort of like, oh, I must be in heaven. And it's like, no, I'm real Pussy, sort of thing. And yeah, they hang out on the plane for a while, which is weird. And then they have the flight attendant that keeps trying to look through various. Like, why do they have like 9 different looking sort of holes into the bathroom? Well, he just like blots one out, and she's just like, "I'll go to the next one." And then he blocks that, and she's like, "I'll go to the third looking thing into the bathroom," and just keeps going to all of them. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he keeps comically blocking them just so he can eventually slide the little thing into his shoe.
Yeah, doesn't really make any sense.
No.
Doesn't really make any sense. Never been on a private jet, but I can't imagine many of them having like 12 different ways to look into the bathroom.
Well, also, this is Goldfinger's private jet, so why are there so many ways for them to spy into Goldfinger's bathroom?
I think you know, based on the women who work on the plane. although, to be honest, that's less... weird of the scene. Which Pierce Brosnan movie was it where he showed up at the hotel in his pajamas with the beard on, and they had the guy, like the 3 guys with the giant video camera, hiding in the closet behind the glass?
What?
You remember that one? He gets like thrown off a boat or something, and he ends up, I don't remember where it was, but he just walks into the lobby of a hotel in like his pajama bottoms with long hair and a beard, and he eventually gets cleaned up, but there are people like hiding in the closet, and he throws an ashtray to break the double-sided mirror, and they're just hanging out back there with giant video cameras like, oh, hello.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably like a little internal reference, because that happens in From Russia With Love, doesn't it? They don't really like explain it too clearly in the film, but they record him having relations with that Russian operative, and their plan is to sort of smear the British government. Russians are planning to smear the British government with this sex tape of one of the operatives. And so it's kind of like a little internal reference, because he's probably like learned his lesson a little bit. Like every time there's a mirror, probably smash it, because they're probably recording you having sex.
Well, of course, in that instance, he like waited until he got a haircut and a shave and got dressed and had some food. And then he's like, oh, now I'll throw the ashtray through the window to expose that you're actually videotaping me.
Well,
not that he's a bit of an exhibitionist, but you know.
It's all about finding the right moment, I think, is the moral of that story. Okay, so he's on the plane with Pussy and hiding from the flight attendant. And then they go find the mafia guys. They're all comically super stereotypical mafia guys.
Yes.
And he has this like super unnecessarily detailed model of Fort Knox. And it's like, didn't you just explain this? Why did you need this giant model that comes out of the floor? That's the thing about this. There's all the gratuitous, like, mechanical stuff that looks really cool. But, like, how many times are you sitting around by yourself and you're a little bit hungover and you're having, like, a cigarette? And you're like, oh, okay, I need to get the model out. And you have to press the button, and it's like,
flips over the pool table, and then you tweak all of those dials to open all of those things.
And you've got some fries on the pool table, and it's like, oh, God, I just flipped my fries over everywhere. And it's like, oh, this is so inconvenient. I wish I just had, like, a room for this, or, like, a picture, like most people.
Well, that's the comical part, is he did have a picture, too. Because it all unfolds in this really weird wave where he slowly... pivoting different pieces of furniture inside of the room into yeah, ever-increasing yeah. Details of models and of depictions of Fort Knox. It's just like, why didn't you just, like, come out with it and, like, reveal the whole thing? But instead, it's like the pool table spins and that other part of the floor comes up and shows the photo. And then finally the whole floor goes to the side and everybody's like, hey, what you doing? What's the deal, Goldfinger? And
they get off to the best line in that, when the floor's sliding, one of the guys says, what is this, a merry-go-round?
Yeah. yeah, no, it's all, like, super unnecessary. But it's amazing at the same time. That's kind of why I love this one, because everything is unnecessary. And I don't know if this is meant to be like a commentary on anything, but like it's like nothing that ever happens needs to happen in this film until the end. If you see what I mean. Like the whole plot point is that, you know, Goldfinger is going to try to like irradiate the US's gold supply. If they found that out, they could just like turn up to where he is and arrest him. Instead, they have one British person on American soil, and it's like all these rotating sort of innuendo named flying people, and it's like, why did any of that happen? So you could have just like turned up with like a few people from the police and just sort of turn up and been like, mate, you're not going to be able to set off a bomb here.
And the CIA's even watching him with binoculars going like, well, he's walking around. He must be fine. We'll just, you know, we'll come back later.
Well, because they see that they're looking over the fence, don't they? And they're like, oh, yeah, send over Pussy or whatever. And she'll, like, sit with him. And it'll look like he's having a great time or whatever. And then they go hang out at KFC, which is amazing. Because in the Blu-ray version, on my 4K television, you horrible people. It looks like a real place, like right now, and it looks like they just did a really amazing like rebuild of what it looked like in the 1960s.
Well, just to make this clear, you do know that your 4K TV is not showing yes. the 4K version of the
yes.
movie.
Yes, I know. I've listened to your show. I've read all the things.
I thought we were going to save the insults till we were done with the lovely movie.
It wasn't an insult. It was just a factoid.
No, I know everything is upscaled, but it looks really good. Yes. And the 4K stuff on like Netflix looks amazing.
How big is it? Do you turn a dial and does it come sliding out of the floor?
Yes, but it actually comes out of the ceiling. Ah. And it's on kind of like a swing. So it has an element of danger. So it kind of flies out. And if you're not quite ready for it, you could get seriously injured. And then we have a small sort of person we hire that has to catch it because we haven't come up with an effective way for stopping it from hitting the wall on its way down. So anyway, it's very complicated, but it's, you know, it's worth it. We're a very budget version of Goldfinger's place. Everything's kind of on like an old moving dolly sort of thing rather than actually on like a mechanical wheel that turns around.
Well, so, I hope you've bought your helper a bowler hat at least.
No, that would be very, very reductive. I think we actually talked about this. We actually had a character like this on Bionic, didn't we? I think his name was Pablo. I can't remember. God, we were really offensive on that show. Anyway, I like my 4K TV.
And you like KFC?
I haven't had KFC in years.
Please don't.
We have Chick-fil-A, which, you know, I shouldn't go to because they're really horrible people, but it's really delicious at the same time. And so it's kind of one of those trade-offs.
Yeah, it's one of those conundrums. The worst people ever. Very delicious chicken.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not, and you know, for mostly their chicken's not made out of, like, dog. So it's kind of like, you know, it's like, do I want a little bit of dog and not much guilt? Or do I want kind of some guilt and some chicken? And so, you know, it's one of those things. We all come up against it every day. Dog or chicken, you know, it's whatever.
Disclaimer, we do not think that KFC actually uses dog. Defocus does not stand behind the statement.
No. Neat LLC does. What was I going to say? Yeah, so they've all been promised like $1 million, and they're like, yeah, that's enough to overthrow the government. Because that it was 1964.
Well, wasn't it like they get $1 million? They can have their million they're owed today, or they can have $10 million tomorrow if they stay and help him.
Yes, and, that is actually.
Yeah, and then they all get screwed. I mean, and $10 million doesn't really sound like that much to betray the government for. So, good job, guys.
Yeah, we can blame all the startups these days for that. They're just sort of like, I'll have $10 million to, you know, disrupt my pivot. And everyone's like, yeah, go for it. And like back then, they were just sort of like, I'll overthrow the government for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, things change.
Inflation.
Yeah, inflation is all about inflation at the end of the day. And so they go, what happens next? They go, they have like they crush the car with the bloke in it, right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, he kills all the mobsters that agreed to get the 10 million. And I'm like, okay, so obviously that was to do something. And then he kills the other guy in this really elaborate, like, method of disposing of a car, and having to extract his gold from later. So then I was like,
super unnecessary.
I was like, why didn't you just kill everybody when they were in the room together?
This is an ideal point at which we can talk about workflows, because, you know, if one guy can benefit from like back to work or whatever, it's the guy in charge of crushing the car. It's like, you know, whatever they talk about like having steps to do something or whatever. They had the wrong steps.
You've
like,
never actually listened to Back to Work, have you?
I was on it once. I listened to that one. And, I still can't believe I've been on that one. It's one of those things where I occasionally mention it and go like, oh yeah, I was on that one. But no, I have listened to that a few times, but not recently. But productivity stuff is not my thing, as everyone knows.
So, so you're suggesting he should have removed the gold first before crushing it?
Yeah, just like, you know, he could have just shot the bloke outside or something. Or like, you know, just any number of other things. Like, they could have just, like, kept him downstairs with James Bond, who is a much bigger threat than the random mobster guy.
Or just left them all in the same room and then just killed them all with the gas like he originally was going to do. And
oh, yeah, because he kills them all anyway.
Yeah, so that's my point, is, like, why did you come up with two different ways to kill these people? You could, and especially when one of them involves, like, having to remove gold bricks from a crushed car later. Because gold is an incredibly soft metal, so now he's gonna have to like re-melt down all those gold bricks again. So yeah, I don't understand.
And technically, wasn't it Goldfinger's car that he crushed him in? Because Oddjob was driving it.
Yeah.
What a waste of a car. But the killing of the other guys with the gas is an equally hilarious scene, because they realize what's happening, and one of them tries to stop it by like running at the gas canisters and then falling over. It's like, what were you doing? And all the while, there's like lightning going off in the room for some reason, because apparently silent and invisible gas causes lightning.
Well, I was going to say,
but the thing is, the
strobe lights were probably causing an epileptic fit.
Right.
That's what killed him.
And they're also like, when he sort of lowers the shutters to like lock them in, they're really slow. And like, I don't know if what you guys would do, but if I was in that room and like all these giant metal shutters started coming down, he had just left the room under some flimsy excuse, I would have been like, we should probably get out of here, he's probably about to kill us. But instead they're just sort of like, let's see what happens here. And then it starts getting bad, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna run at the canister. And then they all die. And it's just, and for some reason, below where Sean Connery is, he's fine, even though like that model is not like an airtight model, you would assume. And so he's just sort of hanging out, and he's just like, yeah, I'm fine.
Spared no expense.
No. It's a double glazed model.
Yeah, and while he's hiding down there, Pussy Galore does the thing that all girls who have crushes on boys do. She runs up and yanks his feet out from underneath him, so he goes face first into the metal floor.
Well, this is after he has escaped by smiling at the guard through the bars.
Which
repeatedly.
Was so great. He walks back and forth, and then one time he ducks, so, oh god, where did he go? And then hides in the ceiling, which is apparently enough motivation to come open the door and wander inside.
Because the guy's like, I've had enough of your shenanigans, stop messing around. Stop messing around. Oh my god, he's disappeared.
He did like the Wayne's World trick where he like slowly lowers himself behind the couch, and he's like, he's actually gone. He found an elevator in the floor.
Yeah, so that is another reason why I love this film. Because smiling at guards will get you out of prison cells. Pro tip.
Good workflow.
Yeah, really good. Better than taking the bloody cards as a crushing thing. And so they do all that. And then he goes... this is when they have the whole sort of barn thing, right?
Yeah. Well, no, they have the weird talk where Pussy Galore is like, yeah, I found him downstairs. And... they're enjoying some mint juleps. And he's like, oh, we'll change into something more comfortable so we can have everybody think that, you know, you and Bond are having a fantastic time. And so she goes off and changes from her tan suit into a purple suit. And then they come back and he's enjoying a mint julep, and they're talking about Operation Grand Slam. It should be pretty obvious to Goldfinger at this point that Bond did not know what Grand Slam was prior to this, because Bond is all like, oh, so Operation Grand Slam is actually this thing, which is a strange kind of conversation to hold when you're trying to give the impression that you already know everything. And yet Goldfinger goes on explaining more of the plan, including also, the dirty bomb.
Right. And also, what an unbelievably terrible name for, like, a horrific plan. Like, if because normally you're meant to have a code name that if someone stumbled upon it, they'd just be like, oh, it's like a grocery list or something. It's just like step one, you know, atomic bomb. So that's a weird thing to get at a grocery store. But, like, this is called Operation Grand Slam. And if you saw that, there's no real mistaking that they're doing something massive and really illegal. And it's just like a super James Bondy sort of thing, which is equally unnecessary.
Well, maybe he's just a fan of Denny's and he really enjoys the Grand Slam breakfast.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Denny's. We could have a whole show about that too. The Grand Slam. Nothing will ever be in the fast food world, not to go off on a tangent. Whatever it is they serve at Arby's, I've never been to Arby's, but it's called like the Arby's Big Montana. And yeah. If anything has ever sounded the opposite of appetizing, it's a Big Montana. Because to me, that sounds like, it sounds like how you would describe like a really gross mouth. And so I just, so anyway, the Grand Slam. Yeah. So
you've never been to an Arby's?
No.
Well, don't do that. And they actually discontinued the Big Montana several years ago. But every time I watch Saving Silverman and they talk about Amanda Peet's talking about how she wants a Big Montana, I always crack up because that doesn't make any sense to me. Why anyone would want that? They must have been paid a little money for that ridiculous statement.
I enjoy the beef and cheddar, which
is neither.
It's well, if you've listened to Roderick on the Line, you know that it's a manner of meat that will melt if you leave it out of the freezer long enough.
Yeah, wait, which is seriously? What I look for in my meat.
Yeah, it melts in your mouth. Yeah. So where are they now? They crushed the bloke. They're in the barn. And he does the very dodgy sort of situation again.
Yeah, it's extremely strange to watch it, especially now, but I can't imagine how this went over back then, because it's one of those situations that Bond used to get into quite a bit in the 60s and 70s, where it's just like being very forceful with a woman, and then all of a sudden she's like, oh, kissing you is actually great now. And it's so strange to watch.
Yeah, no, I that bit, like, it's one of those things where you watch it now and you're a bit like, oh my god, I didn't notice that when I was a kid.
Yeah, I definitely didn't.
But isn't this about the time when they get the little plane? Is that in this film? It's not in this film, is it?
No, this is when crap, they start Operation Grand Slam after this, right? But he's somehow, like, through this process of flipping her through hay, has said that, you know, Washington D.C. should know about this, and that's our only clue about how things will go later on in the film.
Right.
And then don't we go right from this to the plan actually unfolding, and they're like taking Bond along with them for some reason?
And they have the great music as they fly into Fort Knox.
Oh,
let off the gas.
The score for this whole movie is fantastic.
Of which there is very, very little. There's a lot of silence, which kind of makes me want to fall asleep at times.
Oh, come on. It's not like a, you know, 2000s movie where you need like a constant screeching, you know, loud like bass lines through everything. Like, it's fine. It's used with restraint, especially when it's so bombastic and cheerful for gassing everyone to death. I just love that all the female pilots are they're champagne leader and like all the little code words for things. Yeah. Babies asleep, and it's just like, this is so cutesy. I love it.
And speaking of which, at this point, the fact that the U.S. military in its entirety has been alerted to the situation, why did they even let them get to the point where they're flying to Fort Knox? Like, why get the bomb that close? Why not just go to his ranch and just turn up and just be like, hello, mate. So we heard about everything. And that's not okay. So you're arrested, sort of thing.
Well, I think they kind of addressed some of this when Goldfinger and Bond were talking. I think he said something like that Goldfinger said the bomb wasn't there on the property and that it was, you know, it could be anywhere until they actually go through with the plan. And then they'd bring it in. But I don't know why Felix would have known that or relayed that to anybody unless Pussy Galore also told him that. And still, that seems extremely strange, because then if you know everything's going to happen, then you know it's somewhere nearby. Like, it's not in Florida at that point. Like, it's going to be near Fort Knox. So just nip it in the bud.
Or at a minimum, stop the Chinese fellow who shows up with the battery and timer part and just not let him get that part to the bomb.
Yes, it's Kato.
Yeah. Well, and it's so strange, too, because you have to think they somehow trained everyone in the army in this entire base secretly to pass out.
No, that's actually standard training. If you see a plane, fall down. That's what they teach the U.S. military, I've been told, from my time in the army.
As a sign of respect?
Yeah. No, it's a new form of a salute. And if you see a plane, just collapse. It's the most polite thing you could do.
Yeah, because there are a couple of those scenes, too, when they're flying over with the gas canisters, where it's like it literally just buzzed out of the frame, and then they're already on the ground. Like, right. Like no gas distributed down here. I would have been, if I was grading their acting performances, I would have given them a D. Yeah.
Except for the guy who crashed the giant truck, like, right at the entrance of Fort Knox and flipped it over in the ditch just as a way to sell that they've all passed out.
Well, yeah, and even in the town, though, like, on the drive over there, weren't there, like, two cars that had, like, T-boned each other in an intersection? And one of them
Yeah, and
there's,
like, people, like, hanging out the side of the car, and it's like, well, that guy genuinely looks quite dead, you know? Maybe they forgot to, like, tell the town. They just, like, told the military, and they're like, oh, God, well, we don't have enough time to go to the town. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, fall down when planes come.
Yeah, but then, like, what is
so,
it?
Like... So...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No.
I was going to say that, and it's then they bring them all in, they take their gas masks off when they realize that there's no gas, and they use the laser to get through the door, and that's the one of two times the laser's used for anything. Because I would have figured that, you know, having that giant laser would have actually, that could put a dot on the moon. I was figuring it would, you know, come into play for something more nefarious than opening a door, but it works really well as a garage door opener. And they set their plan in motion for setting up the bomb. And that only then, that's when, like, a Geiger counter goes off. And Felix is like, oh, the bomb's here. stop pretending you're dead.
Yeah, because the helicopter drops it in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then they all snap into action. And Goldfinger pulls a very James Bond sort of move and removes his outer layer to reveal a full U.S. military uniform beneath. Which is very, very well done, I must say. And he has, like, a hat in his pocket. Mm-hmm. He then pretends to be an American to escape, right?
Yeah.
Well, he pretends to be an American long enough to get behind the army and grab a gun and shoot them.
Well, yeah. No, doesn't really run away or anything. He shoots his own henchmen, too, so that they think that he's an American, which is super fascinating. But can we talk about the interior set design of that vault?
Oh my god.
It is quite elaborate.
No, it's amazing. And like I for the longest time I was fairly convinced that was like the inside of Fort Knox, like that they actually just sort of like got permission to get inside, because it seemed pretty like pretty intricate in the way these things go. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there weren't enough U.S. government-mandated signs from several series of generals running the base all tacked on top of each other for it to be an actual U.S. facility. But it was very nicely designed, uncluttered, nice modern lines, nice little elevator for your wonderful elevator up-and-down gag.
Nice roomy atrium kind of there in the middle there with a lot of room.
Yeah, for moving your
things at each other,
moving your gold bullion around, and the whole handcuff thing with the one guy who I don't even think a name for, who had the key. That all worked out well.
I forgot he was handcuffed to the bomb.
Yeah, well, Oddjob didn't, and got him handcuffed with the flying hat thing.
The flying hat thing. Like, we've kind of just like glossed over the flying hat a little bit, like, because he kills the statue as much as you can kill a statue at the beginning, and then does a flying hat with like a razor sharp edge exist? Is that like a thing you can buy?
I will point out that they tried that on MythBusters, I believe unsuccessfully. But he does bludgeon the other sister in the neck in the woods earlier.
Well, see, that's also weird too. Is like he decapitates a stone statue. He clearly cuts through metal with the thing, and then her, it's just like bump. Oh, she's dead, but like totally intact.
Well, I think it's just because they didn't give themselves enough license to be like a decapitated human.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah. Well, but
can you imagine? It just takes a really morbid turn after the elderly woman with the machine gun.
That would be a really dark turn for a 1960s Bond film, I guess.
It's like, oh my god, she was just decapitated.
Well, it does get really serious there, because as soon as she gets knocked out, Bond is like, holy shit. And he just like puts his gun down and everyone stops shooting and they all just sort of walk over to her body and like check her for a pulse, and then he's like, all right then, get back in the car. And that's when he does his ejector seat business, but everyone just stops what they're doing as soon as that girl hits the dirt.
Yeah, well, it's also Odd Job does have a series of, well, his motivation is an evil one and a nefarious one, but it seems also sort of aimless to a degree, because, you know, he's totally willing to die with the bomb when Goldfinger's totally not willing to die with the bomb. So it's all very peculiar for like why he feels like he's going to do any of this. We never get any of his backstory. Like, all we know is he's a mute and he throws hats and he doesn't like Bond.
Maybe he was a pro frisbee player and
ultra frisbee.
Yeah, and he just got hit really hard with a frisbee once and was like, oh, I hate everyone, I can't talk anymore, so I'm going to go buy a bowler hat. And then, like, he gets really into, like, metallurgy at some point, and he's just like, what if I had, like, a metal hat? Or at least just on the brim. And then he uses his frisbee skills and his hat-making skills and combines them to become the ultimate henchman. And then takes up becoming a golf caddy as well at some point. That's kind of like a side project. And then he gets into this sort of situation and doesn't acquit himself that well when it comes down to it. Kind of just throwing his hat around all over the place, really.
He's an expert metallurgist, but he's not familiar with how electricity works, apparently.
Right. No, he's very sort of medieval sort of skill set. So he's sort of still at the apprentice sort of level.
And it is a shame that they didn't at least give him a gold razor hat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, considering he's, like, driving Bentleys around or whatever, or Rolls Royce or whatever, and he's just got this shabby metal hat, and it's like, well, you know, you could have done a little bit better than that. Give him a gun or something, you know? Like, it's like, you know, you can clearly afford it. You know, you've got all your rotating furniture and everything. So, you know, Odd Job. This is a story of tragedy in my eyes. No, because then they have the big fight, right?
Yeah.
I can't even remember how he gets himself free. Oh, he uses a gold bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you do. And he breaks himself free, and then they have the big fight. And he electrocutes him. And then the U.S. military people break in, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how do they get in? Is the door closed at that point? It is, right?
It is, but somebody, after Goldfinger runs away or gets pushed out of the way or something, they run up there and they just turn the knob and open the vault.
Right, as you do.
They're all flooding in as the countdown is occurring, and James Bond is just sitting there very gingerly, like, hitting the bomb with a couple of gold bars trying to get the lid open. And obviously, he had to hit it 4 or 5 times before it opened just to make it dramatic, but, like, good God, he was hitting it so gingerly.
And then I'm reading here, and I don't think I've ever noticed this, but this makes me love this movie even more. But apparently, when the US guys get down there and, like, disarm the bomb, the clock stops at 007.
Yes.
On the counter. I've never noticed that. How have I never seen that? But that's amazing.
Yeah, he's getting ready to tear a wire harness out because he doesn't know how to stop it because he can't get the battery out because that part's still locked. And right as he's about to tear the wire out, an American runs up and just hits a switch that apparently he didn't see that just turns it off.
And then we reach the best bit of the entire film, which is when he gets invited to go see the president for some reason, and gets on a plane, and Goldfinger is, like, on the plane dressed as, like, someone? I can't even remember. Or is he still dressed as the military Blake?
He's still dressed as the general, but he somehow managed to have his gold revolver with him. Really thorough security screening by the U.S. military, prepping this flight to the president.
They shoot the gun and crack a window, and Goldfinger gets stuck in the window, and it's this amazing sort of bit of 1960s effect work, and he gets sucked out and flies away, and Bond jumps out with Pussy in his parachute, and all is fine in the end. I can't even remember where they end up, but they're probably having sex at the
end. Yeah, they're in like a forest, and they're trying. Pussy's trying to like flag down a helicopter, and he's like, no, not time yet. And then they roll around and cover themselves with the parachute and roll credits.
So, long story short, amazing film. I don't know why I love it so much. It's always been my favorite. I used to really love Moonraker because it was so ridiculous.
Oh, God.
I know. And but Goldfinger is just, it's such like a classic. I feel like it's the best James Bond film. I actually think that the Daniel Craig ones follow along quite quickly after this one in my ranking of them. I haven't seen too many of the like middling sort of weird ones that are like the Timothy Dalton ones and everything. I've seen a few of them, but not all of them. But I, you know, Goldfinger, you know, it has a special place in my heart. It's obviously not like a masterpiece or anything. It's not like a display of, you know, masterwork in the craft of film. Or at least I wouldn't assume it is. But I don't know. I love it. I feel like it has like some sort of innocence and idiocy, but like fun to it that I just really enjoy. These days, and it's kind of the reason why I enjoyed doing Bionic was that everything is so serious these days that having ridiculous sort of ridiculous little moments, like little tiny sort of holidays, they're kind of nice to have. And Goldfinger is kind of perfect because it's not stupid enough that it's like whatever the Transformers film was that I watched in my hotel room by myself the other day. But it's like it's not sophisticated by any means, but it has, you know, it has some interesting stuff to it. And so I don't know. I like it a lot.
Yeah. While we can all agree that it's not like the best made film, it's definitive of this genre. Like there are a gajillion Bond films, and you can't watch Bond films without having seen Goldfinger, I don't think. 'Cause you don't understand sort of the layered reference to this. 'Cause like this provided basically the structure for everything that came after it, in terms of like, you know, the verbal sparring with your villain before you actually spar with your villain. All that stuff that goes on here is really, I think, essential to watching the rest of them. Especially since Guy Hamilton directed this and then directed several really bad ones. So good job, Guy Hamilton. Director of really bad James Bond films and this one.
Okay, wait, so like what would you guys say is like your favorite Bond film?
If I had to pick only one, I might pick GoldenEye. It has a lot of problems, but I kind of like it a lot. And if I had a sort of a backup choice, I would pick the one with even more problems, which is Tomorrow Never Dies, which is
an
absolutely ridiculous movie.
Oh my God. That's the one with like the evil, like Rupert Murdoch character, right?
Yeah. He's going to take over the world by making, England and China fight each other, in the South China Seas so that he can cover it for newspaper, reasons. With his little clacky keyboard and his stealth boat.
I met that guy at an airport once.
Yes, I remember. Jonathan Price.
I told the story on Bionic, I think. Mm-hmm. It just turned out he was like mates with my dad or whatever. It's weird. Yeah. So my dad, they sort of met and they were like, oh, hey. I'm sort of like, no, you guys don't know each other. And like, it was amazing. Well, okay, what about you, Dan?
I'm also tempted to say GoldenEye just because that, I mean, I remember seeing it and being wowed by it. That's more personally than as a movie itself. But I got to give Daniel Craig a lot of props for doing great stuff with the role these days. But there are still all kinds of problems in those movies. But in terms of one that I just have a personal favorite, yeah, I'd probably still go with GoldenEye.
See, the thing is with the Daniel Craig stuff, he's really, really good at all of the serious parts of being Bond, but he doesn't seem to have as much fun as some of the other Bonds have had.
I think that's the way it's written, right?
Yeah.
It's not designed for him to be fun.
Yeah, I know it's very intentional on their parts, but at the same time, like, the fun stuff is kind of what I like a lot in the James Bond stuff. Even in, you know, Goldfinger, like, all the fun campy stuff is interesting to watch. And if you just have action, then you kind of just have a Jason Bourne movie.
Yeah, he's a darker character, isn't he? He's not quite as good at being wealthy and handsome. He's got debts to settle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's kind of why I like it. As, you know, as someone that really loved the ridiculous ones a lot, like Moonraker and stuff, the more recent ones are kind of the absolute antithesis of that. And in some respects, but many that are not at the same time, they're a little bit more realistic. They're not realistic, but they're more realistic than a lot of the other ones.
You mean all the computer hacking wasn't realistic?
Yeah, maybe not so much of that. But, but like, you know, just some of it is... I don't know, there's obviously issues, but, like, like, Skyfall, I think, with like, the fan service they did, the amount of callbacks in Skyfall to Goldfinger specifically are, like, massive. And I kind of enjoyed that. I mean, as someone that was really into the old films, specifically, like, the first three or four, like, seeing that sort of thing, I really enjoyed it. Like, I love the originals because they're the originals and they do a lot of really hilarious and fun stuff. Like, the opening scene in Dr. No remains to this day one of the stupidest things ever. But, like, I don't know. There's something really special about those. And I feel like trying to replicate that these days results in, like, Die Another Day, which was just miserable. And I think, like, the only real way to do everything these days is kind of what they're doing with the Daniel Craig stuff, just because the way the industry seems to be going, and I'm obviously not an expert, but it seems to be just movie executives in rooms just going, what if we made it darker? And, like, that seems to be what everyone wants. And, like, there's obviously some virtue to that, and there's some artistic merit to it. But, like, the end result and how they've applied it to the Bond stuff has ended up being, like, I mean, Skyfall, beyond anything else, was visually, like, amazing. And the storytelling was obviously a little bit lacking, but I don't know. It's just kind of like, it's not trying to be what James Bond used to be. It's trying to do something a little bit different with the character, which I can admire, I guess, is the way I'd summarize.
Well, you can blame Batman for making how many billions of dollars for every studio executive wanting to make the movies dark and broody now.
Right.
How does Skyfall look on your 4K TV?
Really good, actually.
Shot in glorious 1080p, by the way.
Yes, I know that everything is, and, like, that effects or whatever aren't done in 4K, but, like, all that happened was I had, I moved, and we needed a TV at the office, and so I decided to take my TV in, and it had, like, a few dead pixels, and I was like, oh, I'll just put that one in the office, and I'll get a new one here, and it felt really silly to get, like, a 1080p TV for, like, around $1,000 when I could get a 4K one for just a little bit more than that. I really like it. And, you know, obviously the issues, but it has cool stuff. It has, like, the PlayStation Now stuff. So it streams, like, PlayStation 3 games and stuff like that. Not that I ever use it, but that's kind of cool.
And the 4K Netflix stuff is really great. You bought a 4K Bravia then?
Yeah, I have a Sony.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's really great. It's like, it's not massive, so it doesn't even take advantage fully of the 4K stuff. But it like, at the end of the day, it just makes it look like, I know that nothing is made for it perfectly and all that sort of stuff, but it just makes it look like a really, 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 really super clear an attractive picture of everything else, you know? It's just like a really, really great 1080p TV. And like, I know that technically I'm probably wrong about a bunch of stuff, but to the untrained, non sort of like video, audiophile, whatever, eyes and ears, I really, really, really like it. So I hate you. I get it. But like the 4K stuff, when you put it on, it's like your eyes are melting a little bit. And like, I don't know if it's a gimmick or if it'll ever catch on. Probably not. But
I've seen demos of it. Like, and it's very technically interesting and incredibly crisp and sharp. It's just a matter of whether or not content is available is only thing that I'm picking at. And I'm not picking at you specifically. Like, we didn't mean to make you feel bad. I bought a ridiculous television too, but it's a, you know, it's a 1080p plasma. But then I was like, oh, well, for only $100 more, I can get the internet connected one. Never do that. Cause it's a Samsung. And like the other day I wanted to like turn up the volume on it and it was updating. So you couldn't turn up the volume on the television I owned. And I was just like, this is probably the worst television that's ever existed then. Cause that's basically just the only reason, like it only has like five things it needs to really do. So just do them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, TV is, and all this sort of stuff is weird. Because, I mean, I think I've heard you guys say that, you know, none of these effects or anything, any of the visual effects are done in 4K, right? They're all done in 1080p.
Well, I mean, some shots in some movies will be in 4K.
Right. So, like, some of the IMAX scenes and things like that, right? And
like they'll pick out, they'll cherry pick a couple things and be like, this is the special one. Like, spend the money on that. But, like, ordinarily, you wouldn't really even notice it most of the time. Like, I could show my mom a variety of things and be like, this one's the good one and this one's the bad one. She'd be like, I couldn't tell the difference. It's really just for, you know, like a bunch of people on the internet to argue over.
Yeah, I remember the first thing I saw when we got the TV is, you know, I have this thing where like on Friday nights, you know, my girlfriend and I will watch like a movie or something like that. And usually it'll finish, it'll be fairly early, and it's too late to watch like another movie or a TV show or whatever. And like every Friday, I'll spend like a significant amount of time just hanging out and watching trailers and like the Apple TV trailers thing. Mm. And so when I first got the new TV, I plugged in the Apple TV and it happened to be on HDMI 1. And so I turned it on and I watched the trailer for the most recent Planet of the Apes film, which I really liked, by the way. Did you guys like that? Did you see it?
I didn't see it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dan?
The most recent one? No, I saw the first one with Franco.
Oh, well, this one's really good. Anyway, so, like, the trailer, I put that on, and obviously it's just 1080p or whatever, but it looked, like, so good. And I was just kind of like, oh, well, like, you know, instantly worthwhile. And then, you know, seeing Kevin Spacey's, like, House of Cards 4K face, it's like, whoa. And then, so, you know, and, like, made it all worthwhile. So, I'm fine with my purchase. Not that I have to justify it.
No, you should be. 4K is a noticeable difference, and it's a great thing. I've shot a lot of 4K stuff. It's beautiful footage. It's just we don't yet really have a way to get that to people.
For a lot of things, not for everything.
For most things.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. James Bond looks pretty good in it. Mm-hmm. Seeing KFC in 1080p/4K, whatever. I even was a moron, and, you know, like, obviously the TV does all the upscaling and everything, but I went out and bought the special Sony Blu-ray player that specifically markets it as a 4K upscaling thing, and it's like, I already know my TV is already doing this, and I know that this doesn't really make any difference, but I'm still going to buy it. So I bought it, and it's a placebo for my brain. Well, so there we are.
You can tell your children stories in a couple decades about how you were the first with all of the 4K things.
Yeah, it was just an opportunity presented itself, and me being a gigantic nerd, I was like, this is my moment. And I was given like license to buy all this sort of stuff, and I was just like, I'm going to, and like put myself into like debt to do so.
License to Buy was my least favorite Bond film.
It's just about him in like a supermarket, like, oh god, what do I get? Percy's gonna hate this. I'm not even going to go into it, but, like, where are all of them in the movies afterwards? In the books, they always talk about them. Like, in the next book, he'll talk about how they, like, eventually broke up or, like, she died or something. Or like sometimes he'll still be in love with them and they'll still be together, or he'll be really haunted by it. A bit like what happened in Casino Royale and Skyfall and everything. Oh, and whatever the other one was, the intervening one, Quantum of Solace. And in the movies, it's just kind of like, well, off to the next one. It's kind of just kind of a standalone thing. But well, anyway.
Yeah, even inside of each movie, like he clearly does not really care. Like in Goldfinger, there's the woman at the beginning of the movie. There's the woman at the pool. Then there's the woman in the hotel room, Jill Masterson. Then there's the woman sniper. And then there's...
Who's her sister. That's Jill's sister as well. So, you know, just to hit that home.
Yeah. And then you finally have a pussy galore at the end of this. So then that's five different women. And so obviously, and most of them are dead. And so he wasn't really fazed by a lot of what happened here. It didn't really like impact him. He like bends over and he's like, oh, she's dead, this is terrible. And then next scene it's like, all right, now on to the next woman. It's very peculiar for James Bond films.
Although honestly he should really care, because without making Pussy like him as a person, she may not have like helped him out, and then the whole plot would have been completely different. They would have all died,
I guess.
Well,
apparently their event in the barn was so life-altering that she decided to call the CIA and help them out.
James Bond dealing out epiphanies in barns. I mean, why not? Hey. Oh, God. God, it's weird to be on a podcast. I keep forgetting that I'm on a podcast. I keep thinking I'm just on a phone call.
Well, a podcast is a phone call. It's a phone call you share with friends.
Yes, it is. And then other people.
Yes. People you don't know.
Send you email about it.
And who will show up to special events and say hello to you.
Having taught themselves how to use a sewing machine.
They will shake your hand, turn, and throw you over their shoulder into a bale of hay.
Yeah, well, sometimes you have to throw people into a bale of hay.
Goldfinger, he's the man with the Midas touch, a spider's touch, such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware.